Welcome to JBFC Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Jupin. Very excited to be back for a new season of the show. Thank you for tuning in. If this is your first time, welcome. Also, thank you for tuning in. This week, I thought we would do a little Martin McDonagh 101. We just had him here a couple weeks ago with his new film, Seven Psychopaths. If you're not familiar with Martin McDonagh, he's an award-winning playwright, screenwriter, and now, in more recent years, film director, having started off the way I think any budding filmmaker would love to start off, and that's winning an Academy Award in 2006 with his film Six Shooter. He won for Best Live Action Narrative Short. What you can always guarantee you get from Martin McDonagh is violence, but more than just violence, I guess, because not all of his stuff is super violent. But one thing you can definitely almost guarantee yourself going into a Martin McDonagh project, whether it's a stage play or a film, is a lot of black comedy. A very, very dark humored man he is. And I think that is something to be someone who is accomplished at writing and directing black comedy is, it's nothing to shake a stick. Like, black comedy is, you know, black comedy, dark comedy, you know, is something that's incredibly hard to pull off successfully, mainly because I think to a degree, it's a thing that everyone thinks they can do, you know, oh, let me write this scene and maybe pepper in some sort of morbid action and it'll be hilarious. Well, that's not the case. And it's very rarely the case. I mean, you know, if you sit there and you think, can I compile a list of very successful dark comedies? Not too much comes to mind. I'm talking successful. You can make a list of, you know, dark comedies. That's not difficult, but more so thinking about ones that are really good, things that come to mind. Hal Ashby's Harold and Maude is a great example of what you can produce when you've got a really successful dark or black comedy on your hands. Or, to a lesser degree, but still totally applicable, Robert Altman's MASH and the television show that followed, dealing with incredibly, you know, dark or serious situations and finding ways to bring not exactly levity, but making jokes in these situations that you wouldn't normally laugh at. In the case of Martin McDonagh's work, a lot of his stuff deals with, you know, extreme gun violence to a degree, and, you know, violence of all kinds, not just guns, but, you know, he finds these ways to laugh at this subject matter or create jokes within the world of the subject matter. And I think that's what he's been, or why he's been so successful with what he does. The thing that jumps out at me is his 2001 play, The Lieutenant of Inishmore, which is about an INLA member whose cat is killed. And he then goes on this big, long, you know, stretch for revenge. Not to give too much away, it's one of the goriest plays I've ever seen put on. But it all works. And that's. I guess what I'm trying to get at when I'm saying stuff that's successful is you can do all these things, but a lot of the times it comes off as egregious. You know, why do I have to sit there in this theater and watch all these squibs go off? Well, it's all in service to the actual story, and that's a speed bump. I think a lot of, especially in filmmaking these days, that's a speed bump that a lot of these films sort of can't cross over safely. Can you justify your violence? And later we'll hear from his conversation with JBFC board president Janet Maslin. A lot of people compare him to Quentin Tarantino. He's basically Quentin Tarantino with much less pop culture references or something, but more just addressing this idea of violence. And, you know, he will sort of explain why he doesn't like that comparison necessarily. It's mainly he's doing one thing and Tarantino's doing something else. Not that what Tarantino is doing he considers bad by any means. So 2005, he makes this film Six Shooter, winds up winning the Academy Award, which allows him in 2008 to go on to write and direct his first feature, which was In Bruges with Brendan Gleeson and Colin Farrell. And that film is much more along the lines of a Martin McDonagh play, right? You have a small set of characters, and they're all in a small, isolated setting. In this case, you've got two main characters and, you know, a few secondary and a few tertiary characters here and there. Well, I guess technically within Bruges, there's three primary characters, Ralph Fiennes' character being the third. And they're all, you know, all the action of the film stays within the city of Bruges. So much so that there's a scene where Colin Farrell is literally trying to leave the town, leave the set of the film on a train. And right at the city limits, he's pulled back in just when he thought he was out. Bad Godfather joke. So now we're seeing the next phase of what Martin McDonagh can do when he makes a movie, and that is this gigantic cast of characters set in a bigger world where you are moving all over the place geographically. He wrote both of these screenplays at the same time, and as you'll hear him say, it just turned out that getting In Bruges made first made more sense because as a first-time, you know, feature-length film director, it's much easier to manage something that's closer to what you're used to, which is his plays. Also, the short film Six Shooter takes place almost entirely, in a train car. So along the same lines of his plays, one setting, very few characters. One of the things I love about Martin McDonagh's writing is a lot of the time, and we can see this especially with The Lieutenant of Inishmore, the play, and the film Seven Psychopaths, this idea of small actions being the catalyst for the entire story. And they're often small, sort of bizarre actions. In the case of Inishmore, it is the dead cat that sets off our main character on his bloody journey. And very similarly, it's the kidnapping of the dog, Woody Harrelson's dog, in the film Seven Psychopaths that sort of sets off this entire thing. So for the uninitiated to Martin McDonagh, I hope that was an okay little crash course. We're going to listen in now on the conversation that our board president, Janet Maslin, got to have with Martin McDonagh a few weeks ago. I should say before we play some of the elements from the Q&A that it does contain some mild spoilers, nothing too crazy. It's not like the film really has any kind of twist ending anyway, but, you know, stuff is spoken about here in a pretty vague sense. So there's no specific details that are going to ruin the film for you if you're listening to this and you haven't seen it yet.
Martin McDonagh.
Thank you. Thanks for coming out.
In a movie about endings, I hardly know how to begin. but the main character is called Martin, and he's writing a screenplay called Seven Psychopaths. So is this at all autobiographical?
Just apart from the alcoholism, no, not really. No, I think there are a few truths about the way I think about films in there. I guess Colin's whole thing about wanting the movie to be about love and peace, even though it's about guys with guns, is something I share. So there are details, and the Irish thing is true of us both. But then there are enough. I've never had writer's block. I'm just really, really lazy.
Why did you call him Martin? Did you want the comparison?
To kind of play around with those questions of autobiography and I remember talking to Colin about it a couple of weeks before shooting. You know, is it a silly idea? Is it inviting too much of that on the film? And then I thought, screw it, might as well go for it.
You started writing this a while ago, the same time you wrote In Bruges?
Just after the script of In Bruges was written, I wrote this, but it was before I made In Bruges. So I had the two sort of ready to go. Pretty much the script was the script you see here. But I felt like it was way too big a canvas for a first-time film. In Bruges was similar to the plays I'd done in the sense of it was about, you know, three or four characters and one set, Bruges, and something, and, you know, just performances that I think I thought I could get my head around and be helpful to. This was a much broader canvas. It jumped around in geography and in backstory and just had a lot more act. So I was terrified of jumping into this as a first-time film. But after making Bruges, I realized that it was scary, but it was kind of manageable.
Seems to have worked out very well.
Thanks.
Did you approach the ending in the same way that he does? Did you know how it was going to end when you began?
No, I was sort of in the same place at the start of the film. I had one psychopath. I didn't know where it was going to go.
Who was your first psychopath?
The backstory of the Quaker psychopath, the Harry Dean Stanton, which then becomes the Chris Walken character. So that was like a separate little short story. And I think I might have had some of the Tom Waits backstory details. But that was it. And I had the title of Seven Psychopaths, so I thought I'd have to come up with a few more. So that's kind of how it evolved. It kind of evolved as it does in the film, with a guy not knowing where to go, but being helped out by these little voices in his head.
When you combine the word psychopath with Christopher Walken's name, there are certain associations.
Why?
No one has been able to describe this movie very well before they see it, but they do say it's a little like Pulp Fiction somehow. But you don't really think that.
Not so much. I guess the Tarantino comparison has come up before in my stage stuff too. I think Pulp Fiction is fantastic, but I think there's a kind of a moral through line, I think, in this and in Bruges to a degree. I think it's more of the territory that I wanted to explore in both films. So I'm not sure how much of that is in Quentin's work at the moment.
You know, I mean, you said in print you don't really like that comparison, especially.
No, I'm not sure if any writer really likes to be compared, or filmmaker wants to be compared to too many of his peers.
Is it hard to cast a lot of psychopaths?
It was curiously very, very easy. I did a play with...
not surprised.
I did the film with Colin Farrell before, but I did a play with Sam Rockwell and Christopher Walken about 3 or 4 years ago in New York. So I knew... the handing in Spokane. So I knew those guys, and they were like number one choices for those parts. It was very simple. I said, here's the script. The next day they said, yeah, when? Woody Harrelson I've known for years as well. He's a big theatre guy, so that was an easy choice. And Tom Waits, we almost did a stage musical together once, which fell through, but might one day happen again. So I knew Tom, and... So it was kind of a dream, like, especially Tom and Christopher and Harry Dean Stanton were like heroes of mine from childhood, and just to get them all together in one film is kind of psychotic in a good way.
Did you wind up writing these roles a little bit for, like, Christopher Walken? I can't imagine anybody else doing that.
I can't, and it was the same with the play. I can't imagine anyone else's voice in either of those parts, but not really. It was almost the part was written, and like Chris, in some ways, is usually his character in this is probably the least psychopathic of all of the characters.
That's really saying something.
I know. So it was almost in a way casting against type, but once I thought of him, it seemed just a dream, and it was a dream to. I mean, his line readings are spectacularly different, but we didn't have to change a word. I mean, we did a couple of weeks of rehearsals and made sure everyone was on the same page, but there wasn't a lot of tailoring.
Was it always going to be it's not really gory, but it has a lot of shock effects that involve
it's a little gory.
Okay. The head comes
even I but I hopefully never gratuitous, I guess. I guess it's that too. There are aspects of it, like Billy's shootout story at the end. that is, yeah, fundamentally meant to be a bad film, a very schlocky, horrific piece of trash.
Happy song at the end, too. That was very nice.
The witch?
The happy song.
But I guess with the more violent scenes, we were trying to get them as truthful and kind of horrific in some ways as we could, but not... I think gratuitous means you don't have any kind of care about that side of things. And we did. We wanted to show the horrors of the violence, I guess.
And yet it's so funny.
Thanks.
Could you ever have done this on the stage? Did you ever even consider that?
No. I mean, the vistas and the scope of it was much... It was always going to be cinematic, I think. And the size of the cast and the backstories. I mean, I like theater to be as cinematic as possible, but this one would have been a hard one to pull off.
I know you get asked this all the time, but what is the difference for you, just conceptually, between starting to write a play and starting to do a film?
I think just the size of the canvas, really. If it seems like it's going to be a story set in one or two rooms with four or five characters, it's just going to be a play. And jumping around in time and in geography meant that this one was going to be a film.
Do you think you're going to keep alternating?
Yeah. I mean, I enjoy both. The writing is quite similar in terms of the speed of it and the fun involved. But I feel like making a film takes about 2 years out of your life, so... And like I said before, I'm very lazy. So theater is somehow easier than that. You can come up with a play and have it be staged within like 6 months or so.
What were the toughest parts of this to do visually? That long scene in the desert looks...
Well, it was very cold out there. That was kind of tough and grueling. But it's more the things that you don't have as much control over as a writer or a director, and that's like car stunts. And, you know, on those days, you hand everything over to the stunt people and the stuntmen and the special effects people. And it's almost like there's no... You do the planning beforehand and you storyboard it. But on the day... It either goes right or it goes wrong. If it goes wrong, then you just have to repeat the thing over again. So there's no real artistic input on those days, and that's a little boring, to be honest.
You set a lot of fires in this film.
A lot of cars, a lot of people.
A lot of cars, a lot of people, a lot of gasoline. Is that a tough thing to do, or do you turn that over?
That was, yeah, because it's both dangerous for the stuntmen or whoever else is around. You have to fireproof the rooms. You have to... the safety aspects are quite awkward, so everything slows down, and it just takes ages to do those scenes. So hopefully... You can get it in one. The shooting of the Marines, that was, if that had happened twice, that would have, you know, killed a whole day, I think. And similarly with the Vietnamese monk at the end, we had to, it was storyboarded so we would, it would appear that obviously he set himself on fire, but it was actually switched out with a dummy at the last moment and a movable one. So it's things like that that are kind of a little dangerous and tricky, and you're not really sure if you pulled it off until in the middle of the edit.
We wind up laughing at things like that, which is a very strange...
Well, I'm not sure if that... I wasn't in for the whole... I just came in for the last... I'm not sure we laugh at that. I know we laugh at Christopher's lines after
the fire
that.
With the bunny rabbits all around it.
That bit, yeah, that's... Yeah. I thought, well, it's Zodiac. He deserves it.
Oh. Do you see a lot of movies that are full of gratuitous violence?
Not really. It's not my... I don't even go to see horror films very much.
You don't have to... They don't have to be horror films to be...
True. But no, it's not. I mean, I like older films, like, you know, Sam Peckinpah's stuff, which have violence in them, but I wouldn't say that that's all that they're about, you know.
So when you talk about the moral component of the violence... And the fact that at least some of us have mixed reactions to it, how are you meaning to play on that?
It's more just to question it. You know, Colin's character says at the start, why does every movie have to be about guys with guns in their hands? And it, as much as this is that, it is about gangsters with guns and car chases and shootings. And it's also, you know, a film where Gandhi is mentioned a bunch of times. There are quotes from him. And it's to explore the two, to have, you know, an audience member who's just come to see the violence have to listen to a few Gandhi quotes. I think that's kind of an interesting thing.
You got a stupendous reaction in Toronto, didn't you?
Yeah, that was fantastic too. But I think the main thing is, like, the performances are so wonderful. You know, those boys are such great actors anyway, but it's great to see them riffing off each other and working together so well. That was one of the joys of just being on set. It's like you cast the best people, but you're not ever sure if they're going to gel and have fun or if it's going to be up there on screen. But I think it's kind of palpable, the fun we were having.
How did you get them to gel? Did they rehearse much?
Yeah, we had like 2 weeks with all of the boys and Woody slightly separately because he was doing the more villainous kind of stuff. But yeah, it was about 2 weeks pretty much intensely with me and Colin and Sam and Christopher. So that helped their friendship quite a bit, I think. Also, you know, Chris and Sam did not play before, so they were on safe ground with each other. They like each other very much. I think Chris is one of Sam's heroes from I guess his most actor's kind of hero. And Colin the same. So it was just making sure that part of the rehearsal process is that, is to let everyone make sure everyone's on the same page and show each other your cards and kind of. Also, like, hiring nice people helps. I can't imagine working with someone who wasn't nice.
When you had this screenplay to begin with, and you went looking for backing, and it was called Seven Psychopaths, your reputation in the theater, is that sufficient?
As a drunk, or
no? But is that enough to get a movie made?
I think it helped a lot with In Bruges, and I think In Bruges has helped a lot with this. But it's not like there are a lot of Hollywood studios who want to back something like this.
Did they even see it?
I think Graham, the producer, might have quietly talked to a few places or told them what the script about, or maybe even gave the script to them. But
they would have made you do that ending, the joke ending.
Yes, and they probably wouldn't have gone for this cast either, because that's what they're like. Justin Bieber or someone probably would have been in it. God bless him. But no, so there was only like one company. I mean, Film 4 wanted to put money in, but they didn't have enough, so we always needed American financing for part of it. And CBS are just starting to branch out into films and kind of darker, edgier things, so they were kind of perfect. But it was also the balance of going with people, with financial people who weren't allowed to have to give notes or have input or to change the script. So that cuts down a lot of a lot of financiers.
Nice work if you can get it. That, last question from somebody.
Hi, thank you. I know you tend to really mix violence with comedy, which is fantastic, but what I think is more special about this and a lot of your works is you really mix profound tragedy with comedy also. There are a lot of things that are very, very deeply saddening, and then like a fist in the face, you're laughing. Is that something you consciously try to do, or is that kind of the way your sense of humor operates?
I think that's the way my sense of humor operates. It's not a conscious thing. It's the way I guess I look at the world. I guess you see the tragedy and the horror in it, and you can't help but not laugh at it. But I guess you got to get through it somehow. And you can't. I'd find it hard to make an out and out comedy that didn't comment on that kind of stuff.
This is close enough, I think.
But I think it's the way, just the way my mind works. But I'm glad you liked it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You would love this one.
Thanks for coming, everyone.
And that was Janet Maslin's talk with writer-director Martin McDonagh. And also, if you haven't seen his other two films, In Bruges is readily available on DVD and Blu-ray. It's a very good film. It's a smaller film. It's a little bit more intimate, but just as hilarious and most certainly just as violent. And, you know, you want to talk about a great performance. Ray Fiennes in that film, much like Sam Rockwell in Seven Psychopaths, completely steals the movie out from everybody else, which is not something to say lightly, because both of the films are peppered with really great actors. But it's also really nice to see Ray Fiennes act with his nose on and not just the faceless Lord Voldemort. And the short Six Shooter is also not very hard to find. It's actually on YouTube in full. It's only 27 minutes. I definitely recommend checking that out as well. It's just as funny. There's some crazy elements in that also, namely an exploding cow. So if that has pricked up your ears, definitely check it out. Just go to YouTube, search Martin McDonagh Six Shooter. It's there in its entirety. And that's going to about do it for this episode of JBFC Podcast. Like I said, we're kicking off a new season. I hope to have a lot more of these coming your way. If you are looking for any other film information or event information or education information, of course, check out our website, burnsfilmcenter.org. If you'd like to email me questions, comments, concerns, I can be reached at podcast@burnsfilmcenter.org. Be sure to download the show in iTunes. It's a pretty easy way to stay up to date with every new episode that drops. You just go to iTunes, subscribe completely free. And if you're there in the iTunes store subscribing, feel free to rate and review. It sort of ups the profile of the show in the iTunes store and makes it available to more potential listeners. So thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Andrew Jupin, and this has been JBFC Podcast.